baby boy, who's come to earth to bring us joy. And I just want to sing this song to you. It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift. With every breath I'm singing hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. A couple came to Bethlehem, expecting child. They searched the inn to find a place, for you were coming soon. And there was no room for them to stay, so in a manger filled with hay, the only son was born. Oh, hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
The shepherds left their flocks by night to see this baby wrapped in light. A host of angels led them all to you. It was just as the angel said, you'll find him in a manger bed. Emmanuel, our Savior, hallelujah. 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 A star shone bright up in the east to Bethlehem. The wise men three came many miles in journey long for you. And to the place at which you were, there frankincense and gold and myrrh they gave to you, and cried out, hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
I know you came to rescue me, this baby boy would grow to be a man and one day die for me and you.
My sins were dry, the nails in you. That rugged cross was my cross too. Still every breath you drew was hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, December 22nd, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on a weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of the website, which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. We're going to pick up with a scripture reading tonight. We're going to veer off to the Christmas message. We'll be looking at Luke chapter 2. Let me see if I can get that open. Yep. Luke chapter 2, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 2. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And this taxing was first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria. And all went to be taxed, every one into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth into Judea unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David, to be being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Saviour, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God, and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said one to another, Let us now go even unto Bethlehem and see this thing which is come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us. And they came with haste, and found Mary and Joseph, and the babe lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all they that heard it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things, and pondered them in her heart. And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen, as it was told unto them. And when 8 days were accomplished for the circumcising of the child, his name was called Jesus, which was so named of the angel before he was conceived in the womb. And when the days of her purification according to the law of Moses were accomplished, they brought him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. As it is written in the law of the Lord, every male that openeth the womb shall be called holy to the Lord. And to offer a sacrifice, according to that which is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons. And behold, there was a man in Jerusalem whose name was Simeon. And the same man was just and devout, waiting for the consolation of Israel. And the Holy Ghost was upon him. And it was revealed unto him by the Holy Ghost that he should not see death before he had seen the Lord's Christ. And he came by the Spirit into the temple. And when the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him after the custom of the law, then took he him up in his arms, and blessed God, and said, Lord, Now lettest thou thy servant depart in peace, according to thy word. For mine eyes have seen thy salvation, which thou hast prepared before the face of all people, a light to lighten the Gentiles, and the glory of thy people Israel. And Joseph and his mother marveled at those things which were spoken of him. And Simeon blessed them, and said unto Mary his mother, Behold, this child is set for the fall and rising again of many in Israel, and for a sign which shall be spoken against. Yea, a sword shall pierce through thy own soul also, that the thoughts of many hearts may be revealed. And there was one Anna, a prophetess, the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Aser. She was of a great age, and had lived with an husband 7 years from her virginity, and she was a widow of about 84 years, which departed not from the temple, but served God with fastings and prayers night and day. And she, coming in that instant, gave thanks likewise unto the Lord, and spake of him to all them that looked for redemption in Jerusalem. And when they had performed all things according to the law of the Lord, they returned into Galilee to their own city Nazareth. And the child grew, and waxed strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast. And when they had fulfilled the days, as they returned, the child Jesus tarried behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother knew not of it. But they, supposing him to have been in the company, went a day's journey, and they sought him among their kinsfolk and acquaintance. And when they found him not, they turned back again to Jerusalem, seeking him. And it came to pass that after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. And all that heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. And when they saw him, they were amazed. And his mother said unto him, Son, why hast thou thus dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing. And he said unto them, How is it that ye sought me? Wist ye not that I must be about my father's business? And they understood not the saying which he spake unto them. And he went down with them, and came to Nazareth, and was subject unto them. But his mother kept all these sayings in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature, and in favor with God and man.
All right, the queue is open. Anybody wants to get into the queue, it's *6 and 1 if you're on a phone, and there should be a button there if you're on an app or a browser. Jan, do we have any questions tonight?
Yes, we do, John.
Okay.
The first one is a repeat several months ago or more. People want to know, again, do they have to correct their status? Why or why not?
Well, the answer is no, they don't, because we are free and independent people. You know, we do kind of protect it or make note of it when we write our papers when we enter into the court, and we make the claim that I, one of the people of my case, New York, here and after, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, just being one of the people is enough. I know a lot of people think they have to do all kinds of, you know, exercises. They have to file papers in the county. You know, when I first learned this stuff, I did that myself, too. But some people wanted to get rid of their licenses and their they want to get rid of their licenses and their social security card and so many other things, and they go into the court, make certain claims, and they think that's going to get them some justice, or somehow that courts of justice are going to open up for them. But they've closed the courts of justice quite some time ago, and that in no way is going to open up any court of justice. Chances are, if you're going into court up against the status quo, you're gonna be thrown out of court. And if you're not thrown out of the court, you'll probably lose. Very rarely do people win under that kind of a situation. But making the case and preparing the case for a future is, I think, one of the key things, because we can always resurrect those cases. Because we've lost our courts of justice. Again, they've closed the courts of justice. going back in 1938. And by making certain claims in the court, maybe in, you know, not going up past you know, the gate there, you know, the bar, the judges look at you to some degree like you're crazy on the one hand. In the federal level, I think they understand what's going on. You know, again, it doesn't get you anywhere, though. But on the state level, I think more often than not, they don't understand this, and they just think you're nuts. So it doesn't buy you anything. It doesn't get you anywhere. Again, I've learned all this stuff myself. But I was hearing and seeing a lot of contradictions and many different things. And when I started to do my own research, I discovered why not just use the natural law in itself, use a Bill of Rights, use a Constitution, come in under the law of the land, which you can refer to in the Constitution, and then define it, the law of the land, referring to the Declaration of Independence, as the laws of nature and of nature's God. And, you know, again, there's not much they can say or do about that. They will try to make some moves or decisions, you know, in the court or even outside the court, where, you know, the different lawyers will tell you that that common law is trial court decisions. And, of course, those are the worst decisions anywhere, trial court decisions. They're really horrible. And they've been like that for quite some time. So, no, it doesn't get you anywhere. And it just fills your paperwork up with things that are irrelevant to the case. People should just make their case, declare who they are. They're one of the people of whatever state, you know, I, your name, one of the people of your state in this court of record, sues, that's if you're the plaintiff, and, you know, so on and so forth, and then you go forward. You can put in a memorandum of law, which really would, and refer to that this is a natural law, this is a case under natural law, and refer to that memorandum for the details, as far as, you know, maybe a few pages laying out the natural law. I don't think I've done a memorandum from that perspective. I think I'll do a memorandum and post it up soon. You know, focusing in on just the fact that we are a natural law. We should be under natural law, and that natural law is the law of the land. Even equity is under natural law, because equity has to really, you know, whatever legislation they make has to conform to the law of the land, which is natural law. And equity, up until 1938, were under the rules of natural law. So they changed all that when they closed down courts of justice, opened up civil law courts, got rid of the laws, you know, the rules of common law, or we'll call it natural law, the rules of natural law, claiming that that it caused too many problems, that it was too unjust. So they put the rules of men up there because they think that men is more just than God. So, but no, I really strongly suggest people not to go the route of being the man on the land, but stand on common law, stand on natural law. And again, I have to kind of retrain myself to keep saying natural law instead of common law, because I'm so used to saying common law, but I'm changing my perspective on how to make that claim. Okay, is there any other questions out there, Jan?
Yes, we have another one that's quite long, and it's from a woman who lives in California who you have worked with before, I think, if you remember. She says she needs to know how to handle post-termination relief, Section 388 petitions, or extraordinary remedies in a juvenile dependency case. Although my appeal was recently denied, there are documented procedural and constitutional violations that were not remedied, and it materially prejudiced my parental rights. My case involves legal error and fraud upon the court, not a disagreement over facts. Specifically, the record reflects false statements by the social worker to the court, which I can substantiate with documentary proof. Early termination of parental rights, approximately 10 months, despite completion of my case plan. Failure to provide reasonable reunification efforts. Ineffective assistance of counsel. Untimely jurisdiction hearings held approximately 89 days after detention with no adequate finding of good cause in violation of statutory time limits and due process protections. A change in case trajectory following the father being shot were services that were previously set to continue instead shifted toward termination, with blame improperly attributed to me. Failure to assess and prioritize the maternal grandmother for placement, adoption, or visitation despite the child being placed with a non-relative while relatives were available, contrary to statutory placement references. I need your help. I was working with a man named John. But she lost your contact, I assume it's you, John, and time is of the essence. I need help to evaluate reopening the matter through appropriate legal mechanisms, including a WIC, Section 388 petition, and or other post-judgment relief, and assess related due process claims. She's organized the chronology, supporting exhibits, and relevant record citations preserved. She's looking for someone who can assess the legal posture and advise on the next steps. And she gives her case name and in Marin County, California, the case number, and she is the mother in the matter.
Okay, I heard the grandmother mentioned in there. Is she trying to get the child back for the grandmother or for herself?
Well, it doesn't really say. I wondered about that too, John. It sounds like she's trying to get it back for the grandmother.
Yeah, first of all, I'm not familiar with a 388 petition. I never heard of it before, and of course I just looked it up a little bit and haven't been able to read much about it, but there appears to be something concerning child dependency cases. And under common law, or let me go back to natural law, under natural law, the children belong to the people. God gave them to the individuals. And I don't know what was up with the father, something about him being shot. I don't know what that was all about. Of course, there is still the mother, and whatever the situation with the father, maybe he's a problem, maybe he's dead. I really don't know. But, under natural law, the child definitely should go to the mother. And if the mother wasn't available or there was an inability for being able to take care of a child, and the child, of course, can go to a grandparent or an uncle, an aunt, and so on and so forth. You know, because the children belong to the family. They don't belong to the state. But this state does seem to think that people do belong to them. They treat us as if we are the servants and they are the master, when, of course, the opposite is the truth. And that's what we're battling for. I don't have enough information, and getting the time to get too deep into any case, I just don't have the time to do that. I can only give some advice and thoughts. If I understand a particular problem, maybe I can give some advice and some thoughts on that problem or how to deal with it. I do suggest very strongly, and I don't know whether she was referring to me. Maybe we did habeas corpus or something for her a while back. We didn't get too involved with any case very specifically, but only generally with habeas corpuses, and we did a lot of non-judicial foreclosures. But anyway, you know, maybe we did do something for her. Maybe we have had some conversation. Does she have a first name in this paper?
Yes, she does, John. Let me back up. Her name is Brandy Phelps.
That's not familiar either, but again, I've talked with lots of people. We've done hundreds of papers. So, again, people have to learn to take care of their own business. And I know when people get stuck and they don't have any knowledge, it's going to take time to learn, and that is a problem. And so for those who are listening that aren't in a problem, they should be preparing themselves to be able to take care of their own business. People are taught that if you have a spiritual problem, go find yourself a priest or a pastor or something, and if you have a political or a problem, you go find, not a political problem, but a legal problem, you go find yourself a lawyer. But really, people should be taking care of those things themselves. Both of those individuals have a purpose and can be used to some degree, but I would not count on a lawyer taking care of my business properly. Depending on a case, if there was some kind of a case against me and I was a defendant, I would definitely handle my own business, but I would probably consider hiring a lawyer for the purpose of some advice and understanding from his perspective of what's going on. But I wouldn't let them write the papers, and I wouldn't let them make the necessary claims in the court. And again, it's hard for people to kind of digest thinking that they don't have the abilities, but you do have the abilities. This is not rocket science. It really isn't. It's really a lot of common sense. That's what the process really is. It's common sense. I mean, there are forms and procedures and different things, steps in a court case, and you can learn that pretty simply. The hardest part of learning to deal with legal matters is writing papers. That's the hardest part. It takes a while to be able to get through that. But people need to really prepare for themselves. And again, you can take our course, or you can find that under Education Starts Here and come down to Court Access in the Common Law course. So you can take our course. It's a 90-hour course. It'll teach you how due process works, how to go into the courts, and give you a lot of information. We suggest, of course, the best way to learn to write is to read cases. You can read a lot of Supreme Court cases. There's a lot of good Supreme Court cases out there, the decisions. And you'll be able to get a lot of information. Of course, you can use a lot of that as different things to support different points in your papers on certain conclusions that the Supreme Court might make, might have made in the past. But reading papers, we've got lots of papers here to be read. You could read right on our front page. We have five papers. One, two, three, four, five, six papers that we've written, okay? They're done in presentments and an indictment and an addendum to a presentment. But nevertheless, paragraphically speaking or by sentences, you can kind of see some powerful sentences or paragraphs in it that you can extract and use. In our course, we have a lot of footnotes, which, again, just topical, lists of topics and... you would be able to use those footnotes to support a position or a point, but particularly a meaning of a word in the courts. It's important to really define meanings that might have more than one meaning. They may look at it from one perspective. They look at civil law. We look at natural law. So, of course, anytime we have a situation where we're talking about the law, we want to lay out, particularly in our paperwork, and everything is in the law anyway when you're in the courts, you want to lay out in the court on your paperwork defining what a court of record is. It proceeds according to the common law, and I put behind the word common law, I put in parentheses natural law, but definitely making the point that that we are under the law of the land, which is natural law, the laws of nature, of nature's God. And that's how I would find it, define it, laws of nature and of nature's God. And also, we've written so many cases and papers. I mean, you can find that action. We had an action against YouTube. We had an action against the judiciary. We have some grand jury information. We have grand jury docket, okay, which we have lots of papers, lots of memorandums that we had filed in the courts. So there are hundreds of papers you can read on our site alone. I'm sure you can find other cases that could be read. I started playing around, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, I started playing around with Grok, and that's found on X. That's an AI, if people don't know. I think everybody probably knows that. Maybe someone doesn't. And two things, a couple of things I found out about Grok from trying to ask questions and kind of experiment in almost like a debate with Grok. You know, they will give you anything against the status quo, they're going to give you status quo positions. So you can't really trust Grok on situations, legal information. You know, Grok, I put a lot of information into Grok in a conversation. It's almost like talking to a person. But anyway, I put a lot of information concerning natural law, concerning our founding documents, concerning many quotes that our founding founders had made as they were building, you know, and preparing, building the United States of America. But Grok's position constantly and always came back from the standpoint of the bar. You know, you can't really ask those questions. It's just not worth it because, again, they're going to stick to status quo. And any other question you might ask on many, many other subjects, they're going to give you the most popular results. I mean, it'll go through and maybe, I'll just pick a number out. Maybe 100 cases, 100 different points, and maybe 60 of them lean in a certain way. So that's the position it's going to give. It's not like Grok really thinks. They try to make you think that it can think, but it really doesn't. It's statistical. But with that said, Grok is really a powerful tool that could be used to ask questions, to gather information. You know, I've done a lot of research. I've been researching for a long time now. I don't know, 15 years, maybe more, as far as concerning what's going on in courts and the political process and the problems of our nation. But with Grok, I started asking some questions to get information, and it's a great source to pull information. So you take a case, for instance, they had mentioned a 388 petition. You can go to Grok and get it and ask questions like, what's a good defense on a 388 petition? What's the best way to write paper on that? And I'm sure with a 388 petition is probably some kind of a form, but you want to maybe expound and extend on that form if that's the case. You know, often I'll take a form. We got a lot of forms that we share in our course, and I'll take a form sometimes and change the wording in the form, maybe even write my own form altogether, because it's not written in any way that you had to use their forms. They're trying to really keep some uniformity in the court, and I understand that. But anyway, that could be one way, using Grok to get information, but I don't think, it sounds like the person that asked these questions, or this question, may not have a background in law, and that's problematic. So really a lot of what I have to say is really, you know, it's all new stuff, so it's really not going to be very helpful unless you've been working. And we've been telling people all through this time period, you know, we've had people, when we were doing a lot of papers in the courts for people, I mean, that's got to go back a couple of years. It's been a couple of years since we kind of stopped writing papers because, you know, we're doing it for a couple of reasons. We're trying to help the people to begin with. But also, we're building a case against the judiciary, showing that they that there is a conspiracy, and we proved conspiracy by the fact that whether a judge is in California or New York or Pennsylvania or Maryland or Washington, it doesn't matter where they're at. All these federal judges, particularly, they all come up with the same stuff. So again, it becomes problematic. But in any event. Everyone should know the law. Our heritage is in the law. Our inheritance is liberty. And if you don't know the law, you can't protect and defend your right to your liberty. Okay. Also, if you and again, the main part of our law is the Constitution. That we the people wrote, we ordained and established the Constitution for them. They're to be obedient to that. And this is why we are where we're at. How can a people know when a government has gone off track if they don't know the Constitution, if they don't know the limitations of government, if they don't understand the Bill of Rights? How can they even protect themselves if they don't understand the difference between common law and equity, or law and equity, shall I say? So anyway, I really don't have a solution other than, working on this yourself in that fashion. I am going to look a little bit into the 388 petition, and maybe in a week or two you can ask another question on this, and maybe I'll have some kind of information I can give on that. But it does look like it's something pretty simple. It looks like something that's a form, probably. I haven't had time to dig it out yet. We'll see. Maybe in a couple of weeks I'll have a little more information on that. But as far as doing anything in the courts, we can't do anything right now. We don't have the manpower or the time to be able to, go into the courts on behalf of the people. So, all right, with that, is there any other questions, Dan?
No, John, it was just those two tonight.
Okay. All right, we only have one person in the queue, so if anybody else wants to get into the queue, it's a *6-1 if you're on a phone. And if you're on an app or a browser, should be a button there to push to enter into the queue. Let's see, we got Sula. How you doing, Sula? We talked with you, I think it was last week we talked a little bit, but in any event. Let me see, I'm trying to get you going on the mic. Next question. Hey, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Anybody else wants to queue? Now it's time to get in. Go ahead, Sula.
Okay. I just have a question on, we're renting a building for my husband's business, and it's got one apartment in it. So we are trying to get the owner to see if he can put it on the trust and then through his lawyer, and then we can purchase the trust from him. What are your thoughts on that, and do you know anything about it?
There are different kinds of trusts. I'm only familiar really with a common law or a natural law trust, and I don't know how. In a trust, there's a beneficiary, okay? So there has to be a beneficiary to the trust. And then there's usually two individuals that represent the beneficiary. And I'm drawing a blank on what they're called. But in any event, I don't know how you would purchase a trust or anything of that nature. I mean, in business, I know, for instance, I did a lot of work for some contractors that had a lot of machinery, site work contractors.
Mm-hmm.
And they had millions of dollars in the machinery. And they were operating as a contractor, and the contractor owned the machinery. And what was suggested that they take all of the equipment and put it into a trust or even into another corporation, separate it from themselves. So that when they're out there working and they're at risk, if they get sued, they can't take the machinery from them, which would totally throw them off business if they took it all, or even a good deal of it. That kind of thing. Or you can, so then you move that into a trust yourself. So that's usually the way it would go. But I don't understand what you mean about how you were thinking of using the trust to buy a trust, or to put it in a trust and then buy it. I don't understand.
All the people that we deal with to finance, to get a finance for the building, they ask us to go before the owner and kind of present that to him and see if he can put his property into the trust, he can ask his lawyer to do it, and then we can purchase the trust from him. So I mean, I never heard of that before, but
I've never heard of that and it doesn't sound logical to the knowledge that I have about trusts. But there may be different kinds of trusts. I mean, there's commercial trust, I guess. Look, I've never really looked deeply into trust to begin with, other than common law trust.
Common law, okay.
That's it. So I don't have any knowledge outside of that. And but again, you know, you get back to a beneficiary. I mean, how do you purchase a trust? And again, I just don't understand that.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. How can he put the trust in his name, and then or whatever the name of the trust will be, and then how can we purchase that trust and make, you know, become like ours? You know, we're going to have to do something with it, or, you know, that's not going to, you know, work in our favor.
Is there any paperwork drawn up concerning the idea of this?
Well, that's what we was asking them, if they can just get some paperwork so we can present it to the man instead of go in there without any paperwork. And
well, again, you'd have to have knowledge of how things work, and I just don't understand how someone would purchase a trust. I mean, you know, again, all trusts have a beneficiary, okay? And the two individuals that care for that are called trustees. I don't know why I forgot that name, but trustees. Usually it's two people.
So there will be the trustee, and then what was the other one?
Well, there's the trustee and the beneficiary. Right.
Isn't there another one between it?
No, that's all I know about is, again, okay. I'm only familiar with common law trust and how to create a common law trust. Matter of fact, we give information on that in our court, course. Let's see. Pretty sure we have info on that.
John, there is, of course, the grantor or the trustor who created the trust.
Right, that's the person who put it in. That there is a third person, you're right. Thanks for that correction.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
but the person that gets the trust started and puts the first, maybe some monetary thing, you know, money or something, and for the individual who's the benefit of that. But then they are disconnected from that, and then there are trustees. And again, I've always seen that there's been two trustees, but I presume there could be just one trustee. But yeah, someone has to initiate the trust. But once they initiate the trust, they don't have any connection to the trust at that point. Let me think about that a little bit. They could create it in such a way that is. It's been a while since I looked at this and on this.
Kind
this
of,
is my expertise.
Okay. But like there is, revocable. Revocable trust, that's what
there's
they
a way
asking.
That they can set up a revocable trust, there'd be details on how that would work inside the trust. From that standpoint, I don't know whether they would have anything to do with it at that point, even though it was set up that way.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's kind of a specialty, and remember, the courts don't acknowledge very well the natural law trusts. I mean, they look at it from the bar setup, you know.
So you think it would be better to put it on the common law trust?
Well, again, I don't see how that would work. I mean, once you get something and you want to put that into a trust, again, there's got to be the person who benefits from that trust, okay? And now I do know that there are different kinds of trust, and I don't have not any real knowledge of it, but there are other kinds of trusts, and I think when I spoke with a lawyer concerning this for a contractor, and that's, you know, this lawyer came up with this thing that you shouldn't keep any of your machinery into the company that's actually going out and doing the work. You should create a trust or even a different corporation that owns it and rents it out, or one or the other. A trust is better because you don't have to give any information on a trust, and that information can't be broken, and they can't try to go after the, you know, whatever is in that trust. But again, my knowledge is very minimal on this. I just don't have it.
So, okay, thank you for that. So my one more question, though, about the common law trust. If we have the common law trust, can we public it, you know, like file it somewhere?
Well, yeah. Hang on a minute. Let me just open up a page where there's information on the trusts. If you go under Education Starts Here, come down to Law, and then you support forms and process. Okay. We didn't cover this in. We didn't cover any of that. Oh, hold on. I'm not signed in. Let me sign in. Hang on a second. Okay, let me open this up now. Okay, yeah, if you go under Education Starts Here, come down to Law, and then over to Court Forms and Process, you'll find some information on Trusted Here, I'm pretty sure. Yep, there it is, Common Law.
Okay.
So you can go through all this, you know, all this information. You're still going to need an EIN number, and usually the individual... Mm-hmm. sets the trust up as far as putting the first things in there, usually set that up, so you get your EIN number. Let me think about this. I guess there would still always be a need for that, even though at some point in the near future, IRS is not going to be around. But anyway, it's an irrevocable trust template we have here, and just a lot of information on a trust. And then we also have information on a revocable trust. You have to look into it and see once what you can find. But I still don't understand why they would want to put something in a trust. You're saying that the lender or something?
The lender that we're trying to get the fund, you know, the building, you know, they ask us through their agent to do that. I'm not sure. And, you know, like I said, I never heard of that, but I don't know if we're comfortable doing it. So, you know, we haven't moved on it yet. We're just praying about it and ask God for what his will is. And that's where we at.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to ask that question and see what, you know, if you heard of it and what you think about it.
Yeah, that, like I said, I'm very limited in that. So.
Okay. Well, I'll just go on the site and study that, and maybe I can get some knowledge on it. So.
Yes.
But my husband's kind of reluctant.
I don't know if you have any other questions. There's no one else in the queue at the moment. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? Again, a *6 and a 1 if you're on a phone. And if you're on an app or browser, should be a button. Do you have anything else?
The last one I have is that how do I public the common law trust? How would people know, like, you know, that I have that, or do I don't need to do that, or what?
Well, look, a trust is a secret thing. The beneficiary is not supposed to be exposed. You're not supposed to tell
them
who the beneficiary is. That's to begin with. And that protects whatever's in that trust against any kind of a suit or anything of that nature. Because if someone does something and they fall in risk and of being sued, and they are the beneficiary of the trust, they don't have to reveal that, and they wouldn't know that this property is to the beneficiary on behalf of the beneficiary.
Okay.
A common law trust, you know, you have to file papers with the bank and the resolution for the trust, and there's, you know, the basic paperwork that you just fill out. So when you go to open up an account, a bank account for that trust, you give the trust a name, and you have to get an EIN number, and that comes from the feds, and that permits you to be able to open an account. Now, a lot of banks, I had a hard time trying to find a bank that I can open an account on for a trust that I have. And or I set up, and They kept asking stupid questions, like they want to know who the beneficiary are. I told them, "What are you? You got to be. Are you serious? I mean, what are you asking? That's, you can't know that. It's against. You can't ask that question." But anyway, they gave me a hard time, but I did get a bank that did do it.
Okay.
It was a what do you call it? Bank, a federal. What do they call that?
Credit union.
Yeah, credit union, federal credit union, and so I got a, I had a federal credit union that opened an account for that purpose. So.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate your, you know, appreciate all you all do, and you're in our prayers. Thank you, John.
Thank you. Appreciate that. All right. Well, there's nobody else in the queue. I don't know. Maybe we'll look at some things unless someone has something. Let me see. Doesn't seem to be many people here tonight, so Christmas week, maybe.
John, quick question for you. Are we going to have Bible study on Christmas Eve?
Well, I was planning on it. Right now, yeah, we kind of put something out for Christmas Eve. So anybody interested in a Bible study is coming up this Wednesday. I'm trying to remember what was the title. What was the title that I set up for that, Jan? Do you remember? Do you know offhand? Let me think about that.
Yes, John. It was the Seven Seals in Revelation.
That's it. Thank you. Yeah, the Part Seven one, Seals in Revelation. Three parts. Yeah, I've been working on a lot of studies to get ahead of things, and so I've got. I've now prepared about maybe 8 or 9 studies, so I'm ahead of the thing. I'm not under pressure. But the next one's going to be Seven Seals of Revelation, 3 parts, and I am planning on doing it this Wednesday. And if people can't make it and they're interested in it, they can watch it on YouTube or Rumble. We'll post it on both places. You get that information by going to let's see, education starts here, come down to Bible studies, and we're on topical Bible studies, so you would click on that, and that would give you the information on joining us, and it would also be where we're putting these studies, so we have them in video and in audio. So they'll be here, so if you can't make it Wednesday, and you want to watch it at another time, it's available. All our studies are available anyway. Just like
I expect to see you there. I think it's a good night for it. I appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah, it's Christmas Eve, but hey, good thing to get into the Bible, you know? Anybody interested in coming to that Bible study, it's Wednesday night, 7:30 Eastern time right here in this room. It's usually an hour long. Sometimes we go a little longer, sometimes a little shorter, but... I think this for part one is going to be about 70 minutes. We're probably going to go about 10 minutes over. Okay, let's see if anybody else is in the queue over there. Star 6 and a 1 if you're on a phone into the queue, and hit a button if you're on an app or a browser. Let's see, where are we here? Q&A queue. Okay, no, we don't have anybody in there, so. We didn't have that. Let me reset. Okay, anyway, if anybody wants to get in there. Meanwhile, maybe we'll look at some things. You know, last week it was brought up, and I think it was brought up the week before, a mindset for writing papers or going into the courts. I'll set that aside for right now because we do have someone in the queue now. We got Anonymous. What's your first name and your state? Let me open you up. See, gotta hit that twice. I don't know why. I think I kicked you out accidentally. You can get back in. I accidentally kicked you out, Anonymous. Hit the button twice.
Oh, can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah. Who's that? Basula?
Yes. Merry Christmas. I'm charging my phone. I've been looking at the
Elizabeth.
I don't mean, go ahead, please. I Maybe
am I talking? I'm talking to Elizabeth.
Yes, this is Elizabeth. Yeah,
yeah. Arizona. Nice. Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Merry Christmas. I've been looking at the memorandums, and I mean, I've been in this since September, so you know, I'm still trying to shore up what you call the mindset, you know, and mm-hmm. I'm starting to change. But you know, are these memorandums, can they be used as a backup or a, the reason I'm asking, because they don't have any signature at the bottom, or they haven't been, have they been filed, or how does that work?
Well, yeah, a memorandum is a paper that's attached to the your regular paper. You know, if you're doing a petition, or if you're just responding back and forth, and you attach a memorandum to it, it's called a memorandum of law, and it doesn't get a signature or anything. It's just a research and your position on the law itself. So that you move to the court to see that law from the perspective that you're writing that memorandum of law from, okay?
Okay.
So that's the purpose of a memorandum. I know in the beginning when I was putting memorandums in the court, I did do it almost like, well, I called it a memorandum, but I did put a signature on the end. But I think I've removed that everywhere. Maybe I didn't, because it's not necessary at all.
Okay. But what, so it's the kind of thing that would hold up in court without anything. I mean, it's factual, right? It's just facts, based on facts. And
well, again, you know, when you write a paper, okay, you want to keep everything at as minimum. Less is more, okay? And again, so you write your paper, and let's say it's 10 pages, okay? And as you go over time, you know, I don't know that I've ever written papers that I haven't just gone over like 10 times, trying to make sure I got it right, making changes, changing words, saying it a little with less words, but with the same meaning or more powerfully written. But you want to keep everything at a minimum, but you also don't want to leave anything out. So that's the balance and the challenge that you have in writing. When you write a paper, you want to stay right on the facts in the papers and make your points on your papers. You know, there's a layout and a structure that we teach in the course on how to write a paper. And so there's a process and a procedure all the way down the line, like on the original petition into the court. So when you make a point in law, okay, and instead of, you know, taking all that information, maybe you got a 3 or 4 page memorandum, you know, you don't want to put 3 or 4 pages of law into the paper. Now, I used to do that, you know, in the beginning, and then I realized, well, just write the conclusion, the point, the main point of the law that you're going to write a memorandum in support of that that position that you have. So it's very minimum, maybe a sentence or even words, but just a sentence that's referring to the conclusion of the memorandum of law. Then you put see attachment, memorandum of law, and whatever the title of that memorandum of law is. And that keeps paperwork clean and focused. Because what you will find, I've got a case that is so simple it's pathetic. But I literally have 2 folders, like 2.5, let me see, 2.5, maybe even 3 inches. Well, one of them's maybe about 2 inch, the other one's maybe 3 inch, and thick of papers, because the other side, there's no way they can win this case. So all they could do is fill the case up with, you know, confusion, and then you have to respond to all this confusion, and that's a problem, okay? But as far as you writing the papers, from your perspective, you want to keep it minimum. But it is a problem when the other side just fills it up with garbage and lies and just assumptions, and you have to respond to all of these lies and presumptions and assumptions.
Well, and some of those lies and presumptions are probably rhetorical, right? Because they just want to put a roadblock in. And couldn't you just say that whole last 2 paragraphs was rhetorical?
Well, with I wouldn't use the word rhetorical, but look, at what they're trying to do is confuse the court. That's what they're trying to do. They're also trying to put so much confusion in there to give information to the judge so the judge can rule against me, of course, because I'm going up against the status quo. So they will put all this stuff in there. And this is constant. This is, in this one case, it's three times already this judge has done this, tried to make conclusions on the case, quoting only the bar attorney's positions and thinking as far as just making up lies, literally, and never quoting anything on my side, okay, and then coming to a conclusion in order to throw me out of the court. And they tried that three times. And I think I frustrated the judge, but, my intention is to take it through the appeal process because he's never going to rule for me. But in any event, this is the game they play.
I'm sorry, do you have to endure that, though? I mean, once he started doing that, he's violating the whole court.
Well, absolutely. I even wrote in the papers that this guy needs to be... goodness, what's the words I'm looking for? And is he
not needs, point? I mean, he's taking it off the road, to waste time.
That was outright lying. He's taken the position that I make and turning it around and makes a lie out of the whole thing. Okay,
which is rhetorical. I mean, why wouldn't you say rhetorical? Because that makes it an unanswerable question.
Well, I don't know if rhetorical is the right words for this.
Okay.
I'm not seeing it, my understanding of the word rhetorical. But,
rhetorical. It just means that the press do it all the time. They set up the person they're talking to so that they'll answer it a certain way.
Well,
question.
My point is he should be sanctioned, okay?
Yeah.
And the judge refuses to sanction this guy. And I wrote papers real clear that, look, he said this, that's a lie. Here's the facts. Plus, affidavit rules of the court. Everything I do is an affidavit form. Even just the petition itself is an affidavit form. And, of course, any memorandums that you attach to it becomes part of that. And so you're coming in with an affidavit. And the other side is a lawyer, and he's responding without an affidavit. I mean, right there, it shouldn't mean anything. But look, we're up against evil. That's the problem. And you see, the people, I'm suing a judge and a prosecutor in another court. That's what I'm suing. And this judge in this court is protecting this guy, and both of these individuals, because they're buddies. They know each other. You know what I mean? And... I think I'm going to move it into federal court. That has been my thoughts anyway. But I wanted
Do they have to do something before you can do that? Or, can you just do it right away when you can see it coming after they've, you let them do it a little bit and then just go to go up to the next court? I mean, why?
Well, I might just move it into federal court. I could have went right into federal court, but I wanted to, first of all, have more shots at the apple, so to speak. You can go into the state court, then you go through the appeal process of the state court, and if you don't get what you need at that point, then you can move it into the federal court, then you got another appellate process in the federal court. So, that's the way. And in New York, of course, you got the appellate court and the court of appeals, so you can appeal it twice, and it is two different levels you can go up after the trial court. But first you have to go through the trial court. So I was looking at it from the perspective, I always have such a hard time with these people, that at least I'd have three shots in a state court and then two shots up in the federal court. So I'd have five shots with five different judges or groups of judges looking at the case, and maybe I'll get justice. That's kind of my thinking, and that's why I went through the route. See, this was a denial of due process, so I could have went directly into the federal court.
Okay. Well, thank you. So the memorandum, see if I'm wrong or if I'm maybe getting it. The memorandum is where you can actually go more in. The facts are laid out, and then the memorandum kind of weaves in the law. It brings the law in.
Well, what you're doing is you're building the case to confirm the law that you're making your point upon. Okay. For instance, let's look at some memorandums here. Hang on a second. Let me see where I'm not there now. Okay. Memorandums down here.
Yeah, there's a sea of them.
Okay, memorandum in support of an action. Okay, and there's a lot more. Let's get a topical one. Here's some topical ones. Okay, if I was going in there, here's a memorandum of common law, which I'd like to rewrite because I'd like to use the word natural law. So if I'm coming into a court, I'm definitely going to connect that to a particular memorandum in there. I'm going to first of all talk about, as I mentioned earlier to someone else we were talking. It was you, I think. But anyway, we were talking. No, actually, it was the person before you. But anyway, when you go in there, you want to start off a case, my name, one of the people of New York, in my case, of your state, in this court of record, sues, okay? So now the court of record, okay, you want to define that court of record. So we would define it as that which proceeds according to the natural law, okay? To make that point, I would then put a comma, see memorandum in support of natural law attached, okay? And now you have the memorandum. In this case, I called it a common law, memorandum of common law. So in this case, it was, okay, this particular memorandum was 14 pages. So I don't want to try to support this point in my paperwork, which, again, puts a lot of information into the paperwork. You have 14 pages plus you're working on your petition. Your petition might be 10 or 12 pages, I don't know. And then you might have other memorandums. And so you want to kind of separate them by making memorandums in order to make your case or your point on the law in this case, okay? So it's a memorandum of law, common law. That's why these are all memorandums of law, okay? Which is just position on that point.
Right. I'm just really drawn to them because they go into specifics that we, were reading about in the introduction and in the essentials and they're, anyway, but.
Right. Well, once you go through, if you go through this, here's how I would suggest anybody to go through this course. Okay. Again, as you know, there are, let's open this other side up. Let me see. Education. Well, let me open it in a new place. No, I can do it here. Let's see. Education, come to court access in the common law, and if you're in the course, you'll get these other two tabs that'll open up. And here is the recorded video course, and I'll open up a new tab. Okay. So now, this is how I would suggest someone to go through this course. I would suggest them just listen and watch the videos. Don't take any notes. Don't go open other pages up, there'll be references to forms, and don't go into that. We give enough information as just at least to cover the idea in the course, okay, in the video course. So after you go through the whole course, okay, now you come back, and then you can go through the course again, or you can listen to the audios, and then you can be playing around with the forms and different things that might be referred to. But any form that I refer to, usually I open it up anyway, and you'll see it in the video part of the course. But then there's, of course, the other side of the things, which I'm pretty sure I'd open my page up. Here it is, okay. Now here is the table of contents, okay. And it follows, of course, the videos. So the introduction video, and this is all the information papers and different things, whatever it is that we're covering, okay, in that case. And then the essentials, okay, which we spoke a while back on the mindset. Let's see. here's the mindset, and here's the key to the mindset, okay? This is the point. You have to think free and independent. You have to think as the king, that you're free and independent, that you are the master, they are the servant. Now, you got to be careful how you talk to these people, and you don't want to tell them, look, you're just the servant, and I'm the master, and you got to be obedient or anything like that, because it's not going to get you anywhere. But your mindset has to be right so you write your papers correctly. And to make it as simple as possible, it's really a Samuel Adams quote, okay? The natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth and not to be under the will of legislative authority of man, but only to have the laws of nature for his will. Samuel Adams, okay? So that's the mindset that you have to have. Now, I put a lot of information here to build upon that mindset, okay? And but the thing, the key point is this. You have to think free, act free, and be free. And you have to write all your papers that way. I listen to people talk sometimes, and they mention a statute of limitation. Well, they're not really thinking free because that has nothing to do with us. You see, that's where this mindset comes in. So your writing has to be reflected from that point of view, and your positions and arguments have to be reflected from that point of view. Without necessarily making it clear to them that way. I mean, I would use this quote, of course, in my case. Again, you know, it's just the way you respond. For instance, you know, if a rule, they bring up their stupid rules, the rules of men, and I make it clear, look, at we're under the rules of common law or natural law, and I accept any rule they have that is not in contrary to the rules of natural law, okay? And if they have a statute, if they have some kind of a rule that is in opposition, and they're trying to apply upon me, and it could be damaging to me because of the way they're applying the rule, I'll argue that point and lay out the fact that it's not in harmony with natural law, which is the law of the land. And therefore, it's null and void. Marbury versus Madison.
Yeah.
So, again, you look at, it's a lot of stuff, okay, but it really becomes old hat when you become familiar with it. Yeah. And once And the only way you can familiarize yourself with it is to start at point A and go all the way down to Z, then come back and then start really working more on that, more looking into the forms and playing around with those things and getting a better picture of it. The other thing, of course, is in our course, I think it's on this, let me see. Yep, here it is. Okay, at the bottom of the videos, okay, we have audios, okay?
Right.
So these audios is actually the video, just the audio part of the video. And what you want to do is once you go through the course, okay, the best way to do it is start listening to the videos. Just stick them on your MP3 player or whatever, you know, whatever you listen to on your MP3s. And throughout the day, listen to it. You know, I always play... When I'm really focusing and learning the law and studying a lot of this stuff, I was listening to law all day long, you know. Maybe I was in the pool or something, I'd have it going. And maybe if I'm driving, I'll have it going in my car. Right now, I do a lot of Bible studies, so I listen to a lot of the books of the Bible in my car, particularly on whatever it is that I'm studying. But that's the same thing here. This is law. And you play it, and it becomes, you know, it just, you kind of suck it in through sort of osmosis.
Yeah. You know, I don't mean to be indulgent. If there's somebody else, I can get in line again.
Yeah, there's nobody in the queue. So anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a *6-1 if you're on a phone. Should be a button there for app or browser. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, what's occurring to me is that since I've been in this situation, so it's 3.5 years now, it's been very painful. And I'm not, it's not about froth or, it's like having I can't think of an analogy that wouldn't be dramatic and even graphic because it's been very, very painful. And what's happening is that I'm thinking, well, I'm going to build my case inside this course. And so I am hanging out in the essentials. There's a lot. There's so much, and it's great.
You got to get through it, though. You got to get through it. Okay. What you want to do is get through.
I'm avoiding. It's hard to even think about it. Reading these emails anymore. I mean, it's like, I don't mean to sound like a sissy or anything. It's just hard to watch this. You know, I wish I had more objectivity about it. So maybe if I go through the whole course and don't plan on that, and I know I jumped ahead to the actions of cause and
cause of action. Yep.
Yes, cause of action, and I have a lot of those. And they're really horrible to look at, you know, and it's like, it's my belief system that has to grow. And I think the key, you know, where you're talking about that I have to realize, it's not just I'm trying to get that way, but I have to realize that I am that way, and I have a responsibility to put that on, you know, and live it. And I get scared, you know, it slows me down. And so I'm going through it. I mean, even talking about it right now really helps me because there's no therapist who could help me. You know, people just run, and I haven't even taken it to a therapist, but I don't want to. It's just, I don't know, I have to grow into this. And so I'm looking at these memorandums, and they're like very intriguing to me because I'm beginning to understand the words and, you know, a bit of the structure. But I also know that even from my own experience in life, that I know just me talking to you, you can tell that where I am in the studies because of my lack of the rest of the story kind of thing. So,
okay, yeah. But remember, a lot of this stuff here that's on the right side, okay, which you're on a computer, aren't you? Are you seeing my desktop?
Well, I was heading that way. I'm actually on a phone.
Okay. Oh, if you're on a computer, and again, you can watch this later on because it'll be up on YouTube, it'll be up on Rumble, and you'll be able to see what I'm doing.
I did it one night. I need to do it. I'll try and be more prepared, but yes, please.
Okay, we have the videos, and you know, one is the introduction, then it goes into the essentials, chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, all the way down. Now, all the information on the right side of this paper, okay, that stuff that you'll come to use at a later time, especially when you're writing a paper, okay? But it's on the video side of things, we cover the basics to lay it out.
Right.
Let me just open up this action here. This is basically the structure of your case right here, okay? You have the name of the court and the court address up on the top. You have a cover sheet. Okay, then you have the table of contents, okay, and it lists out all the attachments and everything, and then you start off with the actual papers, which is the petition. It's a verified action at law, so it's a verified, and I don't like to use the word petition, you know, action at law is the key. But in any event, you have your verified action at law, and you could see the jurisdiction is the common law, okay. Got the index number, magistrate for the case, and your name and the plaintiffs, and so on. And the first order of business, again, it starts off here with upon the attached affidavit of the name, blah, blah, blah. Now, in the jurisdiction, you want to put down a subject matter jurisdiction, that the court has that subject matter jurisdiction, and you want to put that information here on what that jurisdiction is that they have. The next thing is
now. I'm on it now. Yeah, go ahead, please. I can see
the personam jurisdiction. Okay, mm-hmm. And then you have the facts of the case, which is the general allegations, and then you have the causes of action. If you have more than one or whatever, you could have a case with just one. Then you have your wherefore clause, and that is the structure of the case. Okay, now. You have a memorandums that will be attached to this, and then you file your papers the way we lay it out. And then they respond, and you go back and forth, and you can go find the forms that you might need here to respond back to these individuals, which has information on it, and it's a structured forms. And
so
you can...
I've got about 10 people that are involved in this in different roles. So mm-hmm. I would file one case and put all their names on it. Is that?
Oh yeah, it's one case. It's one case against. It's all one case, and you have to bring them into the same case, or they'll throw you out because for refusing mm-hmm. to bring in a person that is part of the case.
Yeah.
You
know? Okay.
You have to put them all in, and that could become very complex.
Yeah.
But again, that takes time and thought. And uh-huh. Like I said, when you write a paper, if you haven't looked at it 10 times before you send it out, you haven't done the job right, okay? Because you got to read through it again. Take your time. And you know, I just write. Depending on trying to put the case together. You get your affidavits first. That's the first order of business, is write affidavits. And if you have to write an affidavit, if you have to write individual affidavits concerning each person, which might be the way to go, okay, then you sit down and try to figure out, well, how am I going to put this information down, referring back to the affidavits and the main points to that as you go through the structure. And... And again, it doesn't get any much more difficult than what I'm just saying right now. As far as looking at the structure, it's a very simple structure, okay?
John, would you please give me the path of that again? Because now I can write down the path, because that would just help me find the page that you were showing how you start the case.
Because you haven't gotten to it yet. You need to go through the introduction first and the essentials. Uh-huh. And again, just follow through the video. Don't worry about the stuff on the right side. That you deal with later. All that is for your information to write your case, pull out information, maybe look at the state constitution and get information from that. And on the pleadings and stuff, when you go to write a pleadings, well, then you're going to open up the pleading for a court of record. You're going to open that up, and you're going to start structuring your case in that fashion. But that's too early for you to be looking on this stuff on the right side.
Okay.
This is referenced throughout. When I first learned this stuff, and I learned this through a lawyer, okay, who gave a course called Jurisdictionary, he had a lot of stuff in there, a lot of forms, a lot of papers, a lot of different things. And so I copied everything and put it into a three-ring binder, okay, a couple of three-ring binders. And that's my reference. And until I did my own course, that was my reference that I went through whenever I wrote a case. And at some point, a lot of times, I don't even look at the reference because, I've been through this or that or the other thing. But when I come to something a little new, I'll go up and pull out and look up the reference. For instance, causes of action, okay? There's a list of causes of action we got, there are other causes of action. If you go into your search bar on the Internet and put in causes of action for a certain subject, okay, you'll find a cause of action on that subject or information close to it. Mm-hmm. And then you'll be able to, and when you look at the cause of action, it may say you've got to make three different points, or four mm-hmm. different points, or just two different points, in order to, that you have to prove in order to have that cause of action, okay? Mm-hmm. So, but you don't know any of these things yet because you haven't been through that part of the course. But before you can swim, you got to learn to swim first, and that's what you got to go through these videos from beginning to end. You got to go all the way through them. And then, you use the MP3s, and then this other stuff, if you're writing the case, you'd go to pleadings on Chapter 2, okay, and you would just go through, this information to write your case. I mean, and it gives you the structure, okay?
Yeah, I have the whole thing downloaded. I've got all of the videos, all the PDFs, and I have a binder, and I've got, but I will do that because, thank you. I just really need to find some objectivity about this. Like if it was happening to somebody else, it wouldn't be quite the same experience.
Well, once you go through the entire course, now you have the boundaries of the course, okay? you know, you there's a boundary to the subject matter, okay?
Uh-huh.
And you'll know the beginning to the end and the whole boundaries, okay? Now you have something to work with, okay?
Okay.
And again, a lot of this stuff on the right side, you're going to be going through and pulling up as you're dealing with a case, searching for information that you might want or need in order to respond, you know, to the case. And you have to understand how things work. You know, there's discovery. You know, that you get to get discovery to get information from the other side that they have to give you. Okay? You know, you have to learn all those parts.
Right. Okay, and you know, just the news I've been watching lately and seeing all the law enforcement and government that are actually treasonous, you know, it's not going to, if we have to go on the other side of this devolution, and otherwise, I don't know, maybe God has something else in store, but I'm just really disgusted with the way that, I don't know, I'm judgmental of them, and I shouldn't be. I mean, it's not okay to judge them in that,
sure.
You know, they're,
sure.
they're fallen, yeah. Like I am. I mean, it's just that...
No, you're thinking of an individual basis. Now we're talking about government, that we gave them powers and authorities that they're abusing. No, we should be judging them.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We should be judging them by the law of the land.
Right.
And applying that law of the land on them. As Jefferson put it, to bind them down with the chains of the Constitution. But people
yeah.
don't know the Constitution enough to be able to bind them down with the chains of the Constitution.
Yeah.
They're in the National Liberty Alliance. You know, that's what we teach here.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
But you know, again, as far as all of these problems with all these people, this is a huge conspiracy, okay? You know, a lot of people very easily, you know, you can pay them off to, you know, give them enough money, they'll break their own morals, and unfortunately, you know. You know, people that have principle won't participate, and thank God we have a group of people in the Trump administration that have principles. They haven't compromised their principles. And they're looking to put these people in jail to apply justice to them. But we're not talking about just, you know, the Democrats up there in Congress. We're not just talking about those people. We're talking about individuals in the states, in the towns, in the villages. I mean, this is really, really deep. I'll bet you we're going to end up with many, many thousands of people, maybe 100,000 people. This is huge, and that's why the military is the only way.
I saw Trump call himself the commander-in-chief, and I don't think I've heard him do that before, but, you know, that's one of the things that a lot of people don't know is we're in military law right now.
Absolutely.
We're not in the constitutional law. They took that, and I'm glad, because it's the wrong constitution. And, you know,
military law will apply the constitution, but go ahead.
Yeah, I beg your pardon?
The military law will apply the constitution.
Oh, yeah. Of course, but I mean, I'm just talking about the wild out there. They'll say, well, Trump can't take a judge out of office. Oh, yes, he can. He's done already a lot, and you know, it's like not because he's the president wouldn't be able to do that, but the commander in chief can under military law. And
well, remember the big beautiful bill he speaks about?
Yeah.
Okay, Elizabeth. There's a huge amount of money, I don't remember the numbers, but a lot of money put aside for this problem to be able to hire more people to come in. And there's been, I heard tens of thousands of people that are applying for this process to work, you know, with the border, what are they called there, the border police?
ICE?
ICE, yeah. Yeah. They signed up to work with ICE. And that money gets released in January. I don't know exactly when, but that bill takes effect in January. And then so that money is going to be available, and Trump is going to bring in thousands and thousands of people. and we're going to be hitting this across the United States. And then, of course, you know, the military will be on standby when needed, you know, when they have upheavals in the cities or something, because that'll happen in numerous places. It's already happening in Minnesota, okay? Yeah. And we've seen what happened a couple of years ago with, you know, the Summer of Love, you know.
Right.
As they called it. And so, you know, all these things, there's going to be huge things happening in the beginning of next year, huge, huge things. You know, we're just seeing a little bit of stuff. I mean, it's gonna multiply by 100-fold.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting. I'm just gonna, I'll just do it. Yes, your suggestion is very helpful. I'm just gonna go through it. I need to have a little bit of fun when I'm being successful in my life. You know, and I've had business. It's like, it isn't about fun, like, you know, it has to have some joy of success, or like knowing what to do. And, you know, I'm not just always worried about the crocodiles. You know, I can see one coming in my work, you know, in the work I did. So it's like, because I've run into several of them and gotten hurt by several of them. And it's like, they don't scare me anymore. You know, I can just tell them, well, I'm sorry, I can't help you, you know, but with this, so I'm right back at square one. You know, I don't wish anything. Like, I wish I was 30 years younger, or I'm in a different time. It's supposed to happen right now. And so I'm just going to do it, you know, but I appreciate your suggestion. and I'll do that. I love looking up words and going into words.
That you come back later to do.
Okay.
Know? But definitely, though, look at it. If it comes up to a word that you really don't know how to really have it applied, you know, and you don't understand the meaning of a word, then you'll find that, of course, from time to time. And sometimes you may understand the meaning of a word, but it's put out in a different way, so that probably has more than one meaning, and so you want to go look it up. But the key thing to learning is never let a word go by that you don't understand, because you have to realize when you have a case going and someone says something on the other side and they put up a sentence here or a point here that they refer to or whatever, and you don't understand what they're talking about, well, you're going to be in trouble, because that's the one that's going to bite you in the rear end later on. You
right.
better understand what they're saying, and you have to deal with it and you know, respond to it, and then be prepared for when it does come up in the courtroom, you know.
Right.
So, but going back to what's going on with ICE, okay, there's going to be thousands and thousands of people hired more to be able to deal with, you know, getting rid of all of these individuals that are in here unlawfully. But then I think at some point in time, when the arrest comes, it's going to have to be the military. And that's where, you know, Trump is going to become extremely powerful, because he's dealing with enemies, foreign and domestic, and our entire political structure is infested with enemies of the state, enemies of the people. It's huge. It's just huge, and it's been huge for a long time, actually. You know.
Yeah.
And I don't.
You know, I keep thinking, you know, why is the governor of Minnesota still there? And, you know, because, but our commander-in-chief, he's got his eye on everything, and there's a time and place for, you know, he lets people run long enough to really expose themselves, you know.
Well, so, they set up a queue in the queue papers there. Never interfere with the enemy when they're destroying themselves.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
Let them go. More and more. They just go deeper and deeper. More and more lies. More and more contradictions. But the key to this whole thing is for the people to see. You know,
yeah.
There's a timing for this. And also, look at you. You can't just go arrest people. You have to build a case against people before you arrest them. And in certain cases, you want to get the grand jury going. But I'm going to tell you, at some point, I don't see there's any way we're going to be able to get away without the military coming in and doing military tribunals, because it's too big. It's too huge. This conspiracy is huge.
According to reports I've seen, they're already been happening. You know, it's just they're not.
In some areas, yes, that has been, yes. But, you know, the news hasn't been talking about it. But, yeah, you hear about the stories from different sources outside the mainstream.
But there's some understanding about how people are who are, they're compromised and they don't even know who they are. And they're out following these flags and these groups. And I guess the only way to let them come to the surface is in a slow way. Like, I mean, the sanctuary cities has kind of opened the door for a lot of this. And that was after, you know, the Doge thing, you know, and then it's like, it's all over the place, you know? And so anyway, I just follow
the money.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, lately, I noticed that I'm just talking, but I've noticed that Melania, when she's standing next to him, when he's talking, you know, which doesn't happen a lot, but lately, I mean, she's standing there, she looks very tired, impatient, she looks sad. And I'm thinking, and then I've seen pictures of him, of course, the press can pick a picture that makes, where he's in the middle of a expression and make it look like there's something wrong. But, you know, that art of war thing is like, you know, when you want your enemy to think you're far away, you know, I mean, it's like you do the opposite, you know, and you know, he's, I don't know, he's just really...
Well, when you're strong, you act weak. When you're weak, you act strong.
Yeah, yeah. And are we close or are we far away? And so,
Well, look at that. He's going to accomplish the goal before his administration is done with, and I think next year is going to be a big year, and there's probably a lot of video being taken that'll be put into documentaries and maybe like a movie documentary type thing, so that people will be interested in it. Look at the only key to bringing this nation back is education. Without education, we're nothing. That's what makes us different than the rest of the world. We used to be a people that understood who we were. We forgot who we were. We don't know who we were.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot I didn't know until I started doing my research on who we really are. And so we need to bring this into schools and teach our children, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I think also that the Lord's going to be here extremely soon, sooner than people realize. And... But nevertheless, God commands us to occupy until he comes, because we really don't know, you know. I mean, I've done a lot of Bible studies on this issue for many, many years, and I'm convinced of a certain thing, but I've also learned in past that, you know, you can find a couple of verses in the Bible, for instance, that you kind of missed and kind of changes things and alters things that you've been thinking, and then you have to make that alteration, you know. So, but the thing is that we still have to occupy until he comes. So whatever it is that you're doing or should be doing, you need to be doing it, you know. And right now we need to get education back into school, a proper education. You know, that's something that I don't think we're really going to get much move on until next year's, you know, out and the next year's comes in, because there's so much more that has to be focused and done. Now, I did hear... And I was very surprised. It's the first time since I've been paying attention to anything that I heard, especially the person who brought it up, okay, the vice president, okay, he used the word natural law in his in speech that he had just given the other day. And I had never heard anybody in government use those words, natural law. Now, we did send books, you know, to all of his, you know, Trump's administration, of course, that include Vance, the vice president. So maybe he read the book.
Well, also I've seen reports where I believe there was an executive order or some sort of proclamation that he wrote that to bring common law back into our country.
Where did you see that?
It's been a month or two. I mean, once in a while it comes up. And
well, if you remember where that was, I'd like to see that. You know,
yeah,
I mean, because that's where we really got to go. You know, that gives me a lot of hope, because you know, we've sent so much information. We've done it very professionally. We've done it very carefully. We've done it very lawfully. we've done it in a structured way that works with who we are as a people and our constitution and the law of the land, to send information to try to educate these individuals on things that they're not educated in. I mean, look, one of the biggest things that we're going to really have to face and deal with is getting rid of the bar. Okay, that's going to be a real hard one because they're not going to want to let them go of the power and the authority they have in the courts. They control the courts, but they're too destructive. Okay, and so we have to get to the people who are in power. You know, which again it becomes another problem because a lot of these people are lawyers, especially in the Congress. You know, but we got to get to these people to make them understand what the purpose of the bar was all about, and this is hard for them to digest because. They've been living in it. They're participating in it. And they don't understand that they've been participating with the destruction of this nation.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. That and it's also like it's very spiritual. I mean, the way that it's just evil.
Yeah. Well, look, here's the other side of the coin here, okay? And when I talk about Democrats, I don't mean people in general that are Democrats or Republicans and whatever. That's a whole different story. But the people that are in power and authority, those Democrats particularly, and of course you have the rhinos, the same thing, okay? These people really are demoralized. You know, if you notice, the Republican Party, by God's mercy, most of them, especially that which has been kind of identified between, you know, the rhinos and the true Republicans, or and I don't even know that they understand what a true Republican is, but you know, the groups, let's call it the MAGA group, okay, Make America Great Again group, most of them are Christians. They understand that Christianity is an important part of their life and their government, that we are a Christian nation. Okay, and that's another thing that the vice president brought up, Vance, and the people really applauded that loudly. Whenever I go to an event, there's a Christian focus in it, and that's important because that gives us the morals. You see, that's why you got a lot of people in power that didn't take the money, okay, that didn't get involved in all of this, you know, illegal things and being taken a payola or getting involved, especially with these, you know, taking these huge amounts of money, you know, in these, what do they call them, the I forget what they called them, but anyway, you know, that's what, you know, all that discovery of all that money that is being disappeared by the billions and billions and billions, you know.
Which one was that?
Well, there's all kinds of money that comes out that Congress has been given to all kinds of different groups.
Yeah.
And silly and stupid things, and really, you know, there's a drawback on that. They get paid off when some money comes back to those people on the one hand. So this is where the crime really is. And it's hard for a person that doesn't have a moral compass to be able to deny the money. They see the money, and if you don't have a good moral compass, you're going to take that money. Because the hearts of men is desperately wicked. Who can know it? That's what God tells us. And so without a moral structure, a moral compass, which gives you the ability to say no, you know, hey, I'd love to have $1 million, you know, make life a lot easier, but I'm not going to compromise my principles to get $1 million. If I can earn it some way or make it some way, hey, fine. But, you know, look, we just need what we need to live on. We should be happy with that anyway.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's.
But if they don't have the moral compass, you know, that's why you got the one side carrying a Bible and the other side not. And you could see. I mean, just think about this. What is with these people? You have all of these people in Congress, and they stick together to deny the good things, to empower the people. They stick together to deny all that. Look at this thing with the insurances, where they want to give the money to the insurances, billions of dollars, and Trump says, no, let's give it to the people. How can they vote against that? They were willing to give that money away. Why don't you give it to the people to use it for buying insurance, of course? you know.
Maybe they're compromised, you know. And
there's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
I mean, if I don't know, if I was a young politician, and I think it should be I don't like the word politics, but if I was, you know, and I was invited to one of those dinners after the election, and I was, you know, congratulations, and then they drug me and do things, you know, that I don't give consent to, but they can, you know, they can do that. And I would probably just blow it off. I would have a press conference and tell everybody what happened. Because there's no way that I would want to be labeled as someone that would hurt a child or anything, you know, and you know, that, but see, it's like, I don't know how some of them must live in fear constantly, you know, but some don't have any.
I think now they might be. Before, I don't think they were worried about it because there was no way that they were going to be found out. I mean, Trump upset their whole cart, you know. I mean, really. God. Just think about this, you know. I've heard people, and this is a lot of people think that this country can't survive without political parties. Some people think that maybe we should have three or more political parties, that's going to solve the problem. That only makes the problem worse. You know, look at, if there was no political parties, there'd be no bosses. Okay, yeah. And if there was no bosses to tell these people, you got to vote this way because you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, you got to do this, you got to do that, and if you don't, you know, we're going to make life hard for you or whatever, or maybe they've taken money and that's what they got on them, or maybe they got some other thing, you know, a sex thing or something on them, and they control them, and that I think is mostly what they got, because that's what Epstein was all about to begin with, is getting control over the people, particularly the people in power. And you want to control them, and that's what they've done. They've controlled these people. Now, if you were sent to Congress and you didn't belong to a party, you wouldn't get any marching orders. You're not being told you got to do this, or you got to do that. There is no party boss. You're free and independent. And what are you going to do? You're going to represent the will of the people that sent you there, because that's the ones you're going to answer to. You're not going to answer to the political parties. These people in power do not answer to the people. They answer to political parties. Political parties are the destruction of this nation. And Washington warned us about it from day one, the very beginning, his farewell address. Two-thirds of that is all about political parties and the problems, and it's going to destroy America. Yeah. And we didn't listen. And we think that we have to have political parties.
Yeah. But, you know, we want somebody else to do it for us. And that, you know, it's like, it's, you know, I remember years ago, probably about 2008, about the time that Obama got elected, and there was that nighttime meeting where it was like a sea of people. And I don't know if you remember that. That was when he came to, you know, receive the acknowledgement of him winning. And I noticed they had cameras everywhere and people were crying, you know, and they were so, you know, and it's like, I found this article on how people act differently when they're in crowds than when they act when they're alone.
Oh, yeah. 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 I got some videos up on Rumble on that. You know, one person will get something going and the whole crowd follows along eventually.
They relinquish responsibility. They just go, okay, everything's fine, you know, and no, so that's one of the things that we're kind of been taught to do.
Well, just think if we had a proper education. Just think if children were taught that they were free and independent. Just think if they were taught how our political structure works, and we didn't have politics. Politics is all involved with parties. When you get rid of parties, you don't have politicking no more. You got the political process is what you have, and the representation of the people, and to do the right thing. You'll always get some criminal in there anyway, but it won't be like it is now, and it won't be an organized criminal thing. Without parties, they couldn't have taken control of these different government agencies like the FBI and and the judicial department and the courts and everything, they would be able to take control of that, because you have to have the parties working collectively. But just think, if our children were taught the Constitution, they were taught the Bill of Rights, really taught it, if they were taught who we are as a people, that we're a Christian nation, and what the Bible, what play the Bible has in who we are as a people, and if the children were taught to be free thinkers, not to learn what to think, but to learn how to think, okay? So you give them a proper education, and that they have a duty when they become adults and get out into the world, they have a duty to return back to the people, okay? Because look at, we have a constitution like none other. We have liberty like none other. It's all available to us, and we have a duty to protect that. Getting involved with our community, getting involved with being committees of safety, and participating in the things, and getting involved with watching what they're doing in government or in the courts to make sure they're obeying the law of the land, which is basically the Constitution and the laws that we've given them power and authority to create. Okay, but just how great this nation would be to begin with. Number one, if everyone was taught that to begin with, and then the people are all understand again their powers, their authorities, and their duty to give back, and that they're free and independent. Also, morals should be taught in the schools. Right now, they're demoralizing our children instead of really teaching them morals. Okay, and that's what the Bible gives them. You know, there doesn't have to be any religion being held up. Our founding fathers didn't have a problem with that. You know, as far as the Bible, they impressed the Bible to be in school, and it was in school and remained in school all the way up until 1963 or 65. Yeah, it was 63. I mean, and that, what was that used for? You know, well, who's the king of the court? You know, if you don't know who the king of the court is, we have a problem, because we're under the laws of nature and of nature's God. Well, what God? Well, there's only one God, and he said, I am the Lord thy God, and beside me I know of none other. There is no other God beside me. And so there's only one God. But again, just think how the world will, you know, the problem is, of course, we've always had the prince of the power of the air here, of course, which is Satan. You know, he's the ruler of this world, won by reason of conquest way back when.
That's I believe that's why you're there through this.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
I believe that that's part of why we're here, is God wants to know who wants him. And you know, they have put so many faces on God, this whole thing, that a lot of people don't want anything to do with God, because they think God is somebody else.
Yeah, they have no idea who he is. They have no idea. You know, you can't know unless he tells you. And he tells you in the Bible who he is.
Say again, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you people can't know God unless he tells you. God has to tell you who he is. And he tells you that through the Bible.
Yeah.
And if people understood, you know, that we are created as an eternal being, okay, that there is an eternity. And this I look at as a birthing place, really, to be born again, okay?
Yeah. And so, it's a crucible or an assay, you know, it's to find out. Because, I mean, God was betrayed in heaven by one of his most beautiful angels, you know, and it must have broke his heart, you know.
But we got to be careful with how you say that, because there are three heavens, and you got to figure out where that one heaven is.
Well, this is the first heaven.
Well, again, the first heaven is not necessarily what you think it is. Okay, the third
isn't what I think. It's third we're heaven. In the second heaven and earth age right now. We came from the first heaven and earth age.
Well,
the one that Lucifer was thrown out of.
Yeah, well, there's two wars in heaven, okay? There's the first war, which takes us back to the days of Christ, because there was a war going on at that point in heaven. But it's not heaven where Jehovah is, okay? There are three heavens. There's the heaven, and I don't want to make this into a Bible study here, but I'll just...
No, that's fine. But you and I obviously read it differently, and I respect what you...
No, I understand that, but I'm looking at the deeper end of things, okay? Mm-hmm. And when you go into the Bible and apply it line upon line...
I do.
And he gives you...
I really, really do. Pearls, yeah.
Okay? And, you know, which is knowledge. And over time, the more time you spend in the Bible.
Well,
the more...
but see, dear, I've been in the Bible half a lifetime, and I don't care. I don't want anybody to. People don't need to know how long or anything, because that's timeless. But I'm just, you know, that's the thing. Like, I respect your view and all of that. I don't need anybody to tell me I need to read the Bible more than me. I understand it,
but the problem is a lot of people don't read it.
Well, know what the problem is that there've been a lot of the evil engineering got a hold of the Bible, and there's hundreds of different versions of it, and you know, they put Mickey Mouse faces on Jesus or whatever. We don't even know that's what Jesus looked like.
Nobody knows. Well, and cloth that he was wrapped with that they found.
Oh, the Turin?
If that is real, they have got an impression. But we don't know whether that's real or not, and it's not important.
But it couldn't be. I mean, common sense. I mean, how many Hebrew men could fit that exact thumbprint?
I don't want to get into that discussion.
Yeah.
I just make the point, though, that... But you're right. We don't know what he looks like, and it's not important.
Yeah. No. So, yeah, it's okay, you know, I mean, but that's part of the deception thing and all of that. And so, you know, for me, it's, you know, I know you love God, and I'm not questioning any of it. It's none of my business, but I know. And, you know, it's just that it's a very personal thing. And it's very precious, you know.
If you want to get into into thinking and looking at the Bible verses, how they compare, you know, one Bible verse to another Bible verse to another Bible verse, which reveals the truth. In other words, we look into the Bible through the doctrines of Christ and not the doctrines of men, and that's the big problem today. You know, people look at the Bible and it's the doctrines of men that make the interpretation, when the Bible is its own interpreter. And its own dictionary also, and we can find right back to the... I do my studies in Greek and Hebrew, not entirely, but whenever we get into a situation where there seems to be a contradiction or there seems to be, you know, hard to understand something, well, you got the concordances. You go to the original Greek and Hebrew, and you understand how God used a particular word, and then you can find other places how he used it, and then all of a sudden you get a balance or a harmony of the scriptures that you're studying. But but if you want to get involved in that, that's what we do on Wednesday night.
Okay, well, thank you. Yeah, I've got my own studies and stuff I do, and I support yours. And I'll tell you something. I'm really appreciative. I know it's getting... Did I take the whole hour? No, you did most of the talking. but you know, I know that the reason I can be here is because I know that you love God and you understand the Constitution, that it was a covenant with God, and you know, I think people think they come here because they want our money, but deep down in their hearts, they want God. And some of them want to take God away because they don't know who they are. And it's just, you know, it's crazy because of the politics and the money and the greed. You know, dreams turn into ambition, which is really kind of an edgy sword if we're not, because I can be really smart and have a weak mind at the same time. And if I don't have, they call it character, if I haven't developed any character, then I'm up for grabs no matter how smart I am, you know. So, you know, and God is the one that fills that in. And you know, I know people who are afraid of God, and they, you know, they kind of look at me like, you know, and it's fine because God will, you know, it's the most quiet prayer in a moment of desperation, God will hear it, and it gives him permission to start. And that's what happened to me years ago. And, you know, I don't want to discourage anybody, and I don't want to get in between what anybody has with God and Jesus. Right.
God said if anybody comes to him, he will no wise cast them out. And if you look at his life when he walked this earth for 3.5 years, every single person that came and asked for a healing or whatever they asked for, he responded to them, every single one of them. He never turned anyone away. Only those who rejected him, who rejected, you know, that, of course, you know, that's problematic to them. So.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I call it the great conversation, but it can't be had with many. And, you know, so anyway, but I appreciate you talking but I am very glad that, I don't have any doubt about, you know, that. And, you know, we're just saying the key to is actually living in a state of joy and liberty, and knowing that any judge who comes in or whatever, they are not a power greater than me, and yet to pray to be of service to them, you know, in their desperate time. Because if they're a corrupt official or whatever, they have those moments when they're alone and they're scared, you know, and the fear of death has to go. There's no room for it.
I don't know if you got to the point yet, but you see. And I'm sure I covered it in the study, but if not, definitely cover it here often from time to time. No judges are permitted in a court of law.
Yeah.
Only magistrates. Now, every judge is a magistrate, so they have to put their magistrate caps on, but they can't help themselves making ruling and summary judgments and decisions on this and that and the other thing. They have no business doing that, not in a court of law. That's up to the people. They decide.
Well, then they're violating the Constitution and need to be addressed in court right there.
They're violating the law, which is the Constitution, of course, the law of the land. So, yes, they're violating it.
But if you've got a deputy and sitting in the back who's going to whisk you off to jail because, you know, whatever, that's the price you pay sometimes.
Well, again, this is what the bar did. They destroyed the law of the land. Yeah. They totally destroyed it. Our courts are totally destroyed.
They hid it. They did a good job of hiding it.
Yes, the structure is still there. But they replaced common law or natural law with civil law. That's what they did, which is Babylonian law, which brings you back down to the devil.
Yeah. who's not, I mean, he's already been sentenced to death. So
we've come to the end of our program. We're a few minutes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I shouldn't... I enjoyed talking to you. Yeah, it's like I'm just grateful that you kind of helped me shake this out. Where if I just I'll follow the directions and you know you said the suggestion, and I really sincerely appreciate it because
just remember the things on the right side of this page here. You know, when you go up to the different chapters and all the stuff, the thing that's there for reference to go back to as you're in the courts. Okay.
Right. Okay.
Not that you shouldn't look at it and open up and, you know, continue to look a little deeper into this piece or that piece. Of course, you should be doing that. You should definitely be doing, looking into your state constitution and, of course, the U.S. Constitution, and you'll find that on the right side. We have handbooks, you know, so we refer to that. You should be looking at those, too. But the thing is a lot of this stuff on the right side is application once you understand the structure and how the court works.
Right, and the documents are also very good, you know, the really helpful. In fact, I found the Monroe Doctrine, and I put it in my file.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so thank you for sharing all that with me and whoever else.
All right, well, there's a lot of people listening in, and people on YouTube and Rumble listening in, and hopefully...
Well, I hope they take heart, you know. Well, it's just that I don't know how to stand up because I was always told somebody else is going to do it for me, you know. Let the government take care of it, you know.
Exactly. That's what we've been trained. We've been trained that if you have a spiritual problem, go find a priest or a pastor. If you have a legal or law problem, go find yourself an attorney, and nothing further. That's nothing further from the truth. Okay, because
I found that out.
Knows your case better than you do to begin with, and your real relationship needs to be direct, and you don't need someone in between. Not that they're not helpful, because they are helpful. Okay.
Yeah, of course. You're very helpful. My gosh.
You know.
We need instructors to show us the information and share their experience, strength, and hope.
Yeah, you know, in the churches, what they should be doing really is
reading the Bible.
Well. Ultimately, they should be training the people to not only understand God's word, but to lead them into the Bible for themselves to continue learning God's word. That's the key.
That's what happened to me.
Many places do that.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. It's very rare. I offhandedly say things like, 98% of the churches are off way out there. Where are they? You know, and there are a few that do, and so. But God knows who they are, and so. But thanks again, and. I appreciate you being there, and I don't know what else to say, but it seems like there's things I would like to say, but I'm going to wait until I learn more, you know, and then I'll be able to,
That's why you have to go through those videos one after another, because you got to get the whole structure. And again, after a while, you're going to see this isn't that complex at all. Because natural law is really, really only common sense. That's all it is, you know?
Right.
It's that simple. All right, we got to close down.
Yep. Okay, thanks, John. Have a great week. Merry Christmas to you and everyone else.
And also, we'll still be here for Wednesday night Bible study. Again, for anybody interested, right here in this room, 7:30 Eastern time. We're doing it's the first study of three parts of the seven seals of Revelation. Okay, good night, everybody.
Good night.